H-Town. Let go.
Ain't nothing wrong with a freaky girl. Girl. Ain't nothing wrong with a freaky girl. Girl. Ain't nothing wrong with a freaky girl. Nothing wrong with a freaky girl. Nothing wrong with a freaky girl. Girl. Oh, yeah. No introduction when we show up. All the bad bitches know us. Young nigga from the H. Your girl gon' let me fuck on the first date. And I ain't trippin' on you niggas. Put this flavor in your ear and start trippin' on you niggas. And I ain't trippin' on you niggas. Put this flavor in your ear and start trippin' on you niggas.
Man, what's going on, family? Welcome to another episode of the Tariq Ali Radio Show. And I am your gracious host, Mr. Tariq Ali. Broadcasting live out here in Los Scandalous, California. And I'm ready to chop up good game with the family. Today's show is brought to you by a new series that's in development called Outbreak Zero. Now, this is a series that's set in a post-apocalyptic America where black people become the new ruling majority in the wake of a viral epidemic. It's real deep. And they're having a crowdfunding campaign at Indiegogo. And you can go to outbreaktv.com/donate to contribute to that. That's outbreaktv.com/donate. And also, today's show is brought to you by HiddenColorsFilm.com. That's where you can get the best-selling documentary series, Hidden Colors 1, 2, and 3. Black History Month is coming up, family. So you know you need to get that Hidden Colors 1, 2, and 3 in your life and share that with people who need that ism. Now, we're going to take some phone calls on today's show. The phone number is 818-850-5404. And we're going to take a very quick commercial break, ladies and gentlemen. And when we come back, we will get some of those calls right here on the Tariq Ali Radio Show.
The book, Marginalizing White Supremacy, is available now. You know, it appears that since the first election of Barack Obama, the old days and the old ways of white supremacy has reemerged and is wreaking havoc to black lives every day and in every way. So it's very important that we understand the ins and outs of white supremacy. So pick up the brand new book, Marginalizing White Supremacy, a philosophical call to action post the Obama presidency. And you can get this book at Amazon.com, you can get it at Kindle, and you can get it at Lulu.com. You can also get it at BarnesandNoble.com. Again, that book is Marginalizing White Supremacy. If you want to get some real fly art, and I mean real fly art, you need to check out ArtByRico.com. Now, ArtByRico.com, they offer a variety of original or printed jazz art for any budget and for any occasion, and they ship nationwide. I have some of the art myself in my home, and it's fly. I can vouch for that. Go to ArtByRico.com. That's ArtByRico.com to get up on this fly art.
You are now tuning in to the king of games, Tariq Ali, on Tariq Ali Radio.
I am delivered!
Man, what's up? We are back with the Tariq Ali Radio Show, family. Glad to have y'all tuning in. Now, we're going to get some calls right about now. And don't forget, like I said, go to HiddenColorsFilm.com to get Hidden Colors 1, 2, and 3. Get up on that game. And let's see who we got on the phone before I get into my game today. Let's see who we got on the phone. Come on, phone line. What's up? Who's calling?
Hello. Good night. This is Kevin from calling from Boston.
Hey, Kevin from Boston. How you doing, Bamba Clyde? How you doing, brother?
Not too bad, man. Not too bad.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm just calling to ask a quick question. Like, being like black guys, is the odds against us like getting white girls, is it like a bit harder for like this race?
Is it harder for you to get a white girl?
No, because I came from Jamaica, and like when I step to these chicks, they're like, you know, you're cool and all, but my family don't call me date like black guys. So I'm like, in America, is the odds against black guy like more difficult of getting with a white chick?
So is it more difficult getting with a black girl? I'm trying to understand.
No, a white chick for a black guy.
Okay. Is it more difficult to get with a white girl for a black guy?
Yeah, because I said to a few chicks since coming from Jamaica, and they're like, you're cool and all, but my parents don't allow me to date like black guys.
All right, well, charge them to the game, dude. My thing is this. Stop. We got to get off this thing where we are openly pursuing white people to date. I really want brothers to get off that shit. And sisters, too. We got a very bad habit. I think next week I might do a whole show on that. But we have a real bad habit of pursuing specific races of people and getting turned down by them as if they're some type of badge of honor. And we got to get off that nonsense, brother. Because, look, it's easy to get them. That's why I did the interracial dating show. I didn't do that to put any group on a pedestal. I just did it to show how easy it is to get at certain people because cultural barriers, it's just, it is what it is. It's nothing to get over. But you just got to understand certain cultural barriers. But when it gets into this thing where it's almost like a worshiping of people in the white dominant society that black men and women get into, that's something that we're going to have to cut out, because that's why we keep getting subjugated by systematic white supremacy. Because instead of challenging white supremacy, y'all niggas are sitting up here low-key idolizing these people in the dominant society, and you're not going to empower yourself doing that. That makes sense?
True. Right, yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for the work you've been doing. I appreciate it.
All right, brother. Get you some jerk chicken and go find your sister, brother. Holla.
All right, peace.
Lord, this nigga's trying to get at white women, and they're telling him their family don't like it. So what? Okay. Who are they to get with? All right. I'm not to shit on anybody. But y'all stop this white worshiping bullshit, man. That shit is tired. Black men and women. And again, I think I might do a whole show on that next week. I just saw that movie, Dear White People. It was the movie was real blah. They really hyped the movie up a lot, but the movie was kind of blah, and it touched on that interracial dating thing, and I want to go deep into that. So I got to dedicate a whole show to that, because that's heavy. And again, I just did an interview earlier today for a station in Minnesota. Shout out to those brothers and sisters in Minnesota. I got to get out there to do a lecture. And we're talking about that interracial dating and the psychological mindset that black people have when we engage or pursue specific interracial relationships. It's a real deep psychological phenomenon that happens with us. And it's something that really needs to be explored. But again, the phone number is 818-850-5404, ladies and gentlemen. And again, when we do the next Hidden Colors, we're going to touch on that a little bit too, because we haven't talked about that in the Hidden Colors series, I don't think. We haven't gone deep into that. And again, it's very hard to challenge something that you're desperately pursuing. What's up? Who's calling?
Uncle Flex, it's your nephew, Rasta Keys. I'm just calling to give you much respect and props because of you. Listening to you 6 years ago, it's just really changed my life. It's progressing as a man. Helped me help take care of my family. I slip up here and there.
Yes, indeed.
I don't have it all together, but I just have to big you up. I always spread Hidden Colors to the friends and family, and I just want you to take me out of here. Like, get out of here, you damn nigga. Yes, I love you, Uncle Flex. You the best, man.
Much respect, brother. Hold on.
Get out of here, you damn nigga.
There you go.
All right. Be blessed.
There you go. Man, much respect. Well, let's get into some game, because I be here all night chopping it up. You know, I want to talk about this video, and I played it on the Ustream show this past Sunday with this news reporter in Memphis doing an interview with this lady who was a daycare center director. And I touched on it this Sunday, but I want to go a little bit deeper tonight about it. And I want to play some more of the clip. Because a lot of places on the internet, the clip has been taken down. The news channel or the station or the affiliate or whatever, they've been getting the video taken down. So I'm going to at least have the audio available here in archive so people can get that if they need to get that. But let me explain what happened. And this goes into today's topic, which is having logic over emotion. And this is a test, and this is a case study for melanoid people to observe, because we got to learn how to have our logic game popping so that we don't get caught up in emotional bullshit. And this video is a great lesson, because what it is, the black lady who owns, who I don't know if she owns the daycare, but I know she's the director, so she might be the owner of the daycare center. What happened? The cops were chasing a person who they suspected of being a drug dealer. They were tracing a black man. He went to the daycare center, knocked on the door, and I think he said he had to use the restroom, so he kind of pushed his way inside. And the women at the daycare center, they got him out of there, and the man was arrested. And now the reporter, there's a white news reporter at this Fox affiliate station in Memphis interviewing her, interviewing the sister, the director of the daycare center, and he's talking real slick. He's kind of being belligerent. He's kind of being disrespectful with his questions. The questions are almost badgering the sister, and he keeps trying to implicate the daycare center in the crime, so to speak. He keeps trying to badger her into answering why she would let this criminal in, and he kept trying to bait her to lose her cool. And this sister was cool and smooth, had her mouthpiece crisp throughout the whole interview. And this is something that black folks need to learn and take heed of, because when you deal with white supremacists and suspected white supremacists, they are masters of instigating confrontations and then going into victim mode. They love to instigate little emotional outbursts from black people. And when you respond to them with emotion or aggression, the white supremacists go right into victim mode. That's one of their little tactics. But this time it didn't work. And the great thing is, in this video, it was live. And that's another thing. When you're debating or having a conversation with a suspected white supremacist, usually they control the narrative because they control the media. They can slice and chop and add in and bring in coons and do everything they need to do to slant the story on their side or slant the narrative the way they want it to be slanted. But this was on live TV, which put the white supremacists at a disadvantage. When you're going toe-to-toe with white supremacists and everything is live, they are at a disadvantage because now they can't use their system of racial manipulation to slant the story. That's why a lot of white supremacists don't like to call up to my show. Very few do get brave and call up, but they don't like to call up the show. They like to just kind of troll the internet anonymously, posting in links and rhetoric from white supremacist websites. That's their little shtick. But this was live, and the sister got in him. The sister was real cool, and she made this guy look like an idiot. And that kind of made him a little huffy. Now, if you can find the video and see it, that's great, because you can see this guy's expression. And he was getting frustrated because he wasn't getting her in an emotional, frustrated state. So let me play the video, and I'm going to go in and out of the video and pause it periodically. I'm not going to try to do that too much, but I really want you to peep the game that was going on with this sister. Here it is.
They are. Terry Oliver's here with us, Ernie. She's going to help us understand what exactly happened. How did this guy get in, Terry?
Actually, our door was locked, and we keep it locked every day. He came to the door and knocked on the door and rang the doorbell, and we came to the door and said, "How can I help you?" And he kind of pushed his way in, and we said, "How can I help you?" And he said, "I need to use the restroom."
Was he using the intercom at that point?
We don't use the intercom.
So you opened the door for this stranger.
See, watch that. That reporter's trying to be slick. You opened the door for that stranger.
Well, we opened the door for a person who could have been patronizing our business. Okay. Because if we're servicing 82 students, we don't know every parent, every grandparent, every mother, every father. So we opened the door and said, "How may I help you?" It is a viable business. And so most businesses open doors and ask questions. How can I help you?
Who made the call to let this guy in that they've never seen before?
Again, see that? Now, he basically asked the same question in a different way, trying to be slick. Now, who made the call to let this person in that nobody had ever seen before? Now, she just answered the question. But again, that's a white supremacist tactic. You just keep asking the same question in a different way to get the person frustrated so they can lash out.
Actually, this person who came to our center is could potentially be a client. And so since we are a business, when a potential client, or all of our customers are strangers until we know them, we open the door and say, how may I help you? Because to you, it's a stranger. To us, it's a potential client. And the cameraman's a stranger today. So if he came to our door, our first question would be, how can I help you? Because it's a business.
Does the intercom work? I mean, do you have the ability to say, how can I help you from the outside, and then question and screen the person before you actually let them in?
Absolutely. We do have that option. However, when someone comes to our door, we find it a little bit more welcoming to peek, just barely open the door and say, how can I help you? And that's what we did on yesterday. And then he pushed his way into our center, and our staff perfectly executed our plan and said, you can't come in, you can't use our restroom, not a child was injured, not a teacher was injured. Our staff was perfect in the execution of our safety plan, and I'm very proud of that.
Let me ask you this. Will things change now? Will you screen the person from the inside and use that intercom now versus letting them in? Will you be a little more apprehensive about letting someone actually come in the door?
This is a viable business, I'll say again, and so we'll welcome customers into our center. We'll execute our safety plan just like we did on yesterday, and we'll continue to say, how may I help you? And our prayer is that it will be an exchange like it has been for the last 21 years. We try our best, just like any school, kind of like Sandy Hooks. I think we actually did better than that because he was actually able to get into that building and harm children. And our staff, once again, perfectly executed our safety plan.
Do you see how slick that sister got a mouthpiece on her? That's how you handle white supremacists. When you dig at them, you give them a dig and a burn and a diss so smooth that they can't even come back. You saw how she did that with the Sandy Hook reference? That really burned the white supremacists up. Because when you look at different message boards and Facebook pages that host this video, they're mad. They're like, oh, that raggedy black bitch. They're mad. They're mad because that sister was verbally handling this dude. And she slipped that Sandy Hook thing in there like, "What? Hey, at least we ain't Sandy Hook. Well, y'all let all those white people get killed. You didn't question them." Basically, that's what she's saying, which is very true. Nobody went to the Sandy Hook school where all those kids were shot up and said, well, how come y'all didn't lock the door? They didn't do that. So it's very slick how they're pulling that with them at the Black Daycare Center.
Perfectly. This is a business. And so we welcome customers, and every customer is a stranger until we get to know them.
Absolutely.
So we'll review our system. But I actually think our system worked perfectly. Not a child was injured. Not a parent was injured. Not a teacher was injured. No one was injured. And we've been here 21 years, and I stand firm on the fact that we executed our safety plan perfectly.
And you notice that she keeps reiterating the fact that nobody was injured. Everybody was fine. We did what we supposed to do. So she kept reiterating that fact. This sister was very smooth with her mouthpiece. She wasn't on the defensive. This sister took control of the conversation. She took control of the narrative. She kept bringing the narrative back to where she wanted it to be, which is everything worked out safely. Everybody was safe. Everybody was protected. We executed our plan perfectly, and we're very proud of how things turned out. She created the narrative. She didn't let him create the narrative, because he's trying to create this narrative. How come y'all let this criminal inside of a daycare? That's the narrative that he's trying to create. And he keeps trying to badger this woman low-key, like the white supremacists do, into having some type of emotional reaction to him.
Would it have been perfect if you'd said, how can I help you from the inside versus opening the door and just using the intercom only?
Now, you see he done asked the same damn question about 5 times. You see that? He keeps asking the same question in different ways over and over again, hoping to get her frustrated. Now, black folks, stop letting the white supremacists do that to you. Because what happens is that the white supremacists will start asking you questions, debating you, and ask you the same question over and over again, and repeating the same thing over and over again, and then you get frustrated and just lash out. Stay cool. You got to be cool and you got to be logical. Don't let them play on your emotions, because the white supremacists, they know that we are emotional. They've conditioned us to be that way. That's why when the white supremacists show up in the newsrooms and the news cameras, they know if they throw the camera on certain black folks, black people start performing. You know, black people start shucking and jiving because black people are so desperate for attention. Black people get to bug dancing and tap dancing, and then they look for the next sweet brown that, oh God, there's a fire. They love that. They hide your kids, hide your wife. They love moments like that. They love that. They love niggerish moments. So when you get a moment like this, when you put the camera to a sister's face and she's spitting circles around you, oh, they don't like that.
And extending to them and being welcoming that way versus opening the door.
I think that could have possibly been another news story, you know, or something with the Better Business Bureau. We're coming into your business or asking to come into your business and to see your business and say, hi, you know, how can I help you? We want to know about your business, and we're talking to them through a door. I'm not sure if that's best business practice, but what I do know is best business practice is to have a safety plan in place. We had it in place. To execute a safety plan, it was executed. To keep all of the children safe in our building, they were. To make sure that no adult was injured and no adult or child was.
Smart.
So business is business. This is a viable business for the last 21 years. And
I wish y'all could see the look on this dude's face. The look on his face is like, if I had a Klan robe, I would lynch this Negro woman. The look on his face is priceless.
Every child was safe.
Last question for you. What do you say to the parents who say, this just isn't good enough? I would have preferred to you have talked to the person through the door, through the intercom, versus opening the door.
Again, he's saying the same shit. He's saying the same thing over and over again. This woman has answered the same question like 5 to 6 times. It's not the answer he wants. So now he's going to try to badger an emotional response.
Well, like I said again, that's something that we can consider. We have a very viable parent organization, a PTA. And so I'm expecting those parents to come in and have dialogue with me on how we can make sure that something like this doesn't happen again, that a person gets into our building. But I'm sure that they're pleased. And I know they are because I spoke with every one of them myself, that no child was injured. No adult was injured.
She brought it
back. Nothing happened to any person that we're responsible to care for. We cared for them. We executed their plan. I can't say that enough about how proud I am. And I'm interested to have dialogue in our city.
Watch
about
this.
What will our mayor do about, or whoever, about having a sting operation so close to a child care center because they were chasing him.
Boom. She got him on that one. Why were they having a sting next to the daycare center, which is the real question? Why are they having a damn undercover police sting by a daycare center? Because they're the ones who chased him in there. That sister has a crisp mouthpiece. She didn't get emotional. She whooped their asses with logic. That's how you do it.
So close to a school. And so those are the types of things I'd love to see our city not only have dialogue with child care centers about, but about with our city in general. How are we going to address crime in our city? Because it's not a daycare issue. It's really a crime in our city issue. We executed our plan and executed it well.
Thank you for speaking to us. We
thank
know you didn't have to.
In.
We appreciate you talking
right,
to us this morning.
You.
All right, Terrell, Phil.
This sister spit so much hot fire. We at Melanoid Nation, we sent them a donation this week. We sent them $500. Shout out to everybody who donated to melanoidnation.org. We wrote a check for them and sent that daycare $500 to show appreciation for taking care of those children and to help out that community over there. Let me get my Mac and music on because that's the end of the interview. Let me get my Mac and music on. But that was a work of art. That's how you handle suspected white supremacists. You don't get all huffy because I've seen some black folks on different message boards saying stuff like, man, if that was me, I would have cussed that dumbass cracker out. And like, no, 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 no. That's exactly what they wanted. If that was me, man, I would have told him to kiss my black ass. No, that's not logical because all you would have done was play into their racial stereotype. These emotional, belligerent niggas. He would have went right into victim mode if they would have done that. If that would have happened, that reporter would have went right into victim mode. You got to stay calm and you got to stay rational and you got to be logical. You got to use your logic over emotion. That sister made the logical decision in that interview. She carried herself in a logical manner. That's how you handle these suspected white supremacists. And now the guy, he looks stupid as hell because this video has gone viral. He looks stupid because she didn't take the bait. And that's what happens when you're dealing with suspected white supremacists, when they're trying to badger you as a black person or trying to egg you on. Even if they call you the N-word, they call you a nigga at your job or whatever. Just like Neely Fuller once said, the great Neely Fuller, he said, if somebody calls you a nigga, don't even flinch, especially at your job, because if you start acting emotional, that's what they want you to do. But if you just sit there and don't flinch and damn near ignore it, then they are going to be at a disadvantage because now they are going to look like the asshole and they'll almost come back and apologize. So you got to be the calm and rational one and not take that bait, because they want to lure you into an argument so you can lose your cool. You guys have heard me debate white supremacists on my show before. One of the last ones I did, it's somewhere on YouTube. A lot of people put up my YouTube videos. But I debated one dude, and y'all heard the interview. I'm debating him, and I'm just being cool and logical. And then he got into some name-calling, trying to get me to lose my cool with him. He was like, you know, fuck, you know, Tariq, you're a fucking asshole. You know that, man? You're a fucking asshole, Tariq. You're being a fucking dick, man. And I just stayed cool. So, sir, are you getting upset with me, sir? I don't understand where you're coming from, sir. You sound like you're getting upset with me. The white supremacists can't stand a calm and cool collective black person. They can't stand that. When your mouthpiece is crisp and you're not all emotional, yelling. See, one of them all yelling, fuck you, cracker, fuck the devil. They love that. They love a loud, emotional nigga. Oh, they love that because they can go right into victim mode. But when you're cool and you're just talking regular, just making points logically, they can't stand that because they can't. A white supremacist usually can't go toe-to-toe with logic because white supremacy is an illogical phenomenon. So there's a lot of smoke and mirrors that has to be performed to maintain that system and to even try to logically explain that system. And let's be very clear with that reporter. What they were trying to do is, one thing is trying to sabotage that sister's business. That's one reason why we at MelanoidNation.org, we wanted to send a donation down there, because what they were trying to do was sabotage that sister's business by trying to make it seem like they were somehow complicit with the alleged crime that happened. They always do that to us. Whenever a black person commits a crime, they try to make everybody in the neighborhood somehow complicit to it. But let's just be very clear. Why was this reporter really all huffy and puffy? Because there's another part of the game that a lot of people are missing. There's another part of this that people are missing. You know, the real reason why this reporter was kind of frustrated and low-key badgering this sister who held her ground and held her own, and we're very proud of that sister. The real reason he was badgering her and kind of droning in on her and getting frustrated with her, it has nothing to do with children's safety. Let's just be clear. That reporter could give less than a damn about the safety of those other kids in that daycare. We all know that. Let's be very clear. They could give less than a damn about the safety of children in the black daycare center. They were upset because Miss Oliver, the lady at the daycare center, and they messed up for them a potential bigger news story. They messed up the daycare people. They messed up a potentially bigger story. Because the thing is, this brother, this black man, this young black man, was accused of selling crack somewhere on the corner around that area. Who knows? Who knows if that's even true? They said he was a drug suspect. So we don't even know if the guy was actually doing a crime or not. I just need to see more evidence before I can even go into that narrative or believe that narrative. But he was suspected of a crime. And he was being chased by the cops. So the young man pretty much knew his life was in danger. The cops probably were going to kill that dude. You know how things are going on in this country right now. Cops are out here blowing brothers' heads off. So the cops were probably going to kill this guy. The cops were probably going to murk this guy. And what happened, he knew he was probably going to get murked. So he wasn't trying to so-called get away, I don't think. But he ran to a daycare center for safety. That's why he went to the daycare center. He went to the daycare center thinking, okay, if I go here to this daycare center, they're not going to kill me around all these kids. So when the people at the daycare center let him in, potentially they saved that man's life. That's why that reporter is frustrated. That's why that reporter is upset. You got to look at what the reporter is saying and asking, and look at what he's not saying. Look at the little code words. Because again, the white supremacists, they usually speak in code. So what this reporter is basically asking, he's not asking, how come you put those other children's lives in danger? It's like, why did you, Miss Oliver, save this nigga's life? Why did you let that nigga in and save his life? He could have had his brains blown out and we could have had a great news story. I could have won an Emmy. I could have got an award. This could have been a great ratings news. Just, how come you didn't let this nigga get killed? That's what it seemed like. They wanted some type of big finale with this situation, with this black man running from the police, knowing if we don't know if he did anything or not did anything, done anything, but the story could have been more tragic than what happened. What we do know is if that brother was going to get killed by the cops, which there is a possibility that he could have been, that sister at the daycare center saved that man's life. That's what these motherfuckers don't like. They don't want this whole community thing where we're saving each other or potentially saving each other. They want it to be open season on us. All the way open season. So none of this whole, you find sanctuary here and there. You found sanctuary at a daycare center. They don't want all that stuff. That's why they're trying to shame the daycare center and send out a message to shame any other people who try to harbor somebody who should be killed. Look at the big picture, man. Look at the big picture of this. That's why they're so frustrated. They're trying to send a message. If we're trying to have open season hunting on you niggers, don't y'all go out here harboring any of them. Don't go out here trying to save them now, because we're going to shame you and try to ruin your business. So this is why we don't fall for the okie doke, family. I'm glad that sister let that dude in. I don't think that there was no danger. I think the dude was going in that daycare center to save his life, because he knew those cops were going to try to blow his head off. So again, we got to get a code of conduct. And I'm not saying, dudes, if you are doing crime, don't go out there doing no crime and don't do no crime around no kids. I'm not saying that at all. Don't be doing any kind of crime at all at this point. But if you are suspected of a crime, because we can guarantee that we won't commit a crime, but we cannot be guaranteed that we are going to not be suspected of a crime, that we won't be suspected of a crime. We don't know that. So we got to be in a position where we can help ourselves and help each other. Because these white supremacists are not joking out here. And again, that sister, she had a crisp mouthpiece. She was logical. She didn't let them play her like no sucker. She didn't let them play her like no fool. And you need to learn from how that sister handled her business. Get your mouthpiece crisp, family. Deal with people logically. Let's get a code of conduct, because that sister was on a code. She had the correct code of conduct, and that's how we should handle ourselves at all times. Anyway, guys, that's been today's episode of the Tariq Elite Radio Show. Don't forget to join me live on Ustream this Sunday. I will chop it up with you then. I'ma holla.